the history of the Maya. Today we're going to look at social groups, clans, and powers. And then I'll also mention a little bit about the kings, but then go into the kings in a much more detailed fashion next time. And would point out that most of this information would be true in the classic period, the height of Mayan civilization. And there are similarities between the Aztecs and the Toltecs and others, but that would be a completely different topic. So let's stay with the Maya and look at Mayan social groups, clans, and power. Now, each Maya belonged to two blood groups, the matrilineal group, descended from the mother, and the patrilineal group, which is descended from the father. Each individual had both a name given by and inherited from the mother and another taken from the father. So frequently, the first name is the mother, the last name is the father. If they have a middle name, this is usually an attribute of the individual or something that makes them separate. So you can really trace genealogies pretty easily. Now, patrimony. Property could only be inherited from the father, like the king's crown belonging only to pass down the patrilineal line. Members of a patrilineal group were expected to help one another in times of need. For example, they would buy out a relative who had been thrown into slavery because of debt or crime. Patrilineal group also held lands in common. According to Bishop Delanda, each family amongst the common people was allotted 37 square meters, 400 square feet of land, to farm. This unit of land was known as the Hun Unic. Scholars believe that the matrilineal and patrilineal groups were also used to control marriage between relatives. For example, a man might marry his mother's brother's daughter or his father's sister's daughter, but he would be barred from making other particular marriages. Alongside and cutting through these blood groups were very strong class divisions. It was extremely prestigious to be able to trace your lineage on both your mother and father's side back across many generations to a noble family. Indeed, the word for a noble, almehen, translates as a man whose bloodline can be read on both sides. Among members of the nobility were wealthy farmers who owned their own land, prosperous merchants, priests, leading warriors, and more priests. All those who held office within the political hierarchy, including counselors, judges, and governors, were members of the nobility. The most important positions were filled by close members of the ruler's own blood group. The chiefs were carried in a litter decorated with plumes and borne on shoulders of strong men. Scribes also occupied an elevated social position. They were leading members of the king's retinue. Most cities probably had a school for scribes, where royal and noble children, such as the younger sons and daughters of the king, or his children by secondary wives and concubines, would learn the complex skills of reading and writing Mayan hieroglyphics. Literacy was probably not widespread amongst the general population. Scholars estimate that perhaps 1 in 4 of the Maya could read, and probably far fewer could write. Archaeologists have found attempts at writing by non-elite scribes at minor settlements or on bricks that were fired at Comalco, but these are not comprehensible because those responsible clearly not mastered the difficult technique required. All they could manage was a crude imitation of the fine calligraphy found on carvings and ceramics produced by the elite scribes. Now, beneath the nobility were the free workers, those who were allotted the Hun Unic on which to grow their maize. They were liable to pay taxes in the form of crops to a tax collector. The priests who played such a vital role in reading the stars and patterns of history to determine the correct planting times were supported with crops from the field. The farmers probably saw the food sent to the temple as a gift to the gods, eaten by the priesthood on their behalf. Now, there is slavery, and it's a little bit controversial. Some men worked on the lands on behalf of the wealthy. Now, this is usually a requirement, and a certain number of members of the family would work a certain number of days on the leader's property as, you know, payment for his helping out with the gods and everything. But they're not considered slaves. But there was a large class of slaves. Now, many of these were men and women captured in war. For the most part, only the most noble amongst the captives were sacrificed, while the poorer prisoners were put into slavery. Others were individuals from Mayan homelands who had been brought to slavery by wrongdoing or poverty. So if you committed a crime, you'd lose all of your goods and be sentenced to work that off. Slaves were also traded across the vast network of routes that crisscrossed the Mayan lands. For most, there was no way out of their condition if you were captive, and their children would also be slaves. But for people who were from that particular tribal group, it was possible for individuals and groups to buy your freedom. Now, female slaves worked drawing water from wells, dyeing cloth, and grinding maize. Male slaves were put to work as laborers, fishermen, and carriers of cargo for the merchants. The males were given an ill-kept appearance with ragged clothing and roughly cut short hair. Mayan architecture and city planning reflected and reinforced these class divisions. In general, the king and his retinue and the nobility lived close to the center of the city, frequently surrounded by a wall. The Mayan cities were usually centralized on the temple complex and its fine plazas. Around these were grouped palaces and homes for the elite nobles, with merchants and other professionals living in smaller dwellings just beyond them, and the humble homes of the working people more distant still in these areas. Now, haven't said anything at all about the king, so let me just mention king leadership of the Maya is really strong during this classic period. After the collapse of the classic period, the cities may have leaders, but they're not of the power that is found at this time in the classic period. Now, the rulers of classic period Mayan states were dynastic leaders revered by their people as holy kings. A man such as King Chonmuan of Banampak held sway from a canopied throne protected by a curtain and sometimes covered with jaguar skins over a large palace retinue that included his extended family, military staff, kitchen workers, dancers, and bands of musicians, and the Akhenaten, the chief scribe, himself in charge of a team of artists, sculptors, and scribes. The important position of the shal, the head of the military staff, was usually filled by a close relative of the king. A shal could be dispatched to govern a provincial town. So I'm going to stop here, and we'll deal with the king and the rituals associated with him, as well as clothing, because the Maya are not quite as strict as the Aztecs and the Toltecs, but you wear a certain type of clothing that represents your status. And if you move up in status, you're allowed to wear a different type of clothing. It allows the people to take at a glance to see where you are in the status of society. And if you're in the wrong clothing, it can be punishable by some significant fines. The sources for this are The Maya by Cole, The Civilization of the Maya by Anquin, The Popo Vuh, In Search of the Maya by Brunhaus, Outline Dictionary of Mayan Glyphs by Gates, Incidents in the Travels of the Yucatan by Stevenson, New World Archaeology by Scientific American, Aztec and Maya by Phillips, Yucatan Before and After the Conquest by Delanda, Rise and Fall of the Maya by Mayan Civilization by Thompson, and Maya History and Religion by Thompson. So I hope you enjoyed that, and as always, don't forget to come by the website, summahistorica.com or historyaccordingtobob.com, and ask a question, leave a comment, check out our merchandise, and if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.